Hello, everyone, and welcome to UBS On Air. I am pleased to welcome you to the final episode of the year for our series House Call Talking Equity Markets with UBS Asset Management. For today's special, I'm delighted to be joined by Jeremy Zirin, Portfolio Manager of the Houseview Equity Portfolios and Head of the Private Client U.S. Equity Team, and Dominic Shager, Senior Equity Investment Specialist with UBS Asset Management. Today, Jeremy and Dominic will kick things off with some key insights and perspectives on what we can expect for the U.S. equity markets in the year ahead. With that brief introduction, I'll pass it over to Dominique to lead us into some Q&A.
Siobhan, thank you, and thank you for having us in the show. It's hard to believe we've reached the final episode of the year. To wrap up 2024, we'll be diving into an exciting and forward-looking discussion on what we can expect in 2025. In fact, our colleagues at Global Wealth Management have just released their new year ahead piece, The Roaring Twenties, The Next Stage, highlighting key trends and themes that investors can expect in 2025 and beyond. So today we'll reflect on the remainder of this year's outlook and share our thoughts on what's to come. From shifting market dynamics to long-term investment themes, we've got a lot to cover. So let's get started. Jeremy, could you start us off with a recap of 2024? From the economy to the U.S. equity market, did it play out as you expected coming into this year? Or were there any surprises that stood out?
Sure. So let's start with the economy. You know, for the most part, global growth surprised to the upside, largely driven by the stronger results coming from the U.S. If you look at developed market economies, they're on track to grow by a little under 2% in 2024, compared to the consensus estimates of closer to 1% at the beginning of the year. And the delta has really been driven by the outperformance of the U.S. economy, where continued robust labor markets, consumer spending has all fueled, you know, the upside. Overall, the U.S. GDP is on track to grow by about 2.5% this year, and this strong backdrop has helped fuel growth in corporate earnings, with the S&P 500 earnings growth tracking to about 9-10% for the year. On inflation rates continued to fall this year after most measures of inflation peaked in mid-2022. I would say that the pace of deceleration was a bit uneven during the year, with inflation surprising to the upside early in 2024 and then resuming its steady decline. But at the end of the day, you know, the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, the PCE inflation measure, is down to 2.1%, or essentially at the Fed's 2.0% target. You know, lower energy prices have helped drive that headline number down, but even if you look at core PCE inflation, which strips out the more volatile food and energy components, core is running at 2.7%, which is half the 5.5% peak rate that it was at 2 years ago, and it's been trending towards the Fed's 2% target. So at least for now, you know, the Fed seems to be winning the war on inflation, and that's allowed the Fed to start to cut rates, and they've already reduced the Fed funds rate by 75 basis points in September. Moving to markets, the combination of resilient growth and decelerating inflation has provided a good backdrop for stocks this year. So as of late November, you know, the S&P is up over 25%. If you decompose that gain between changes in earnings and changes in valuation, what you find is that earnings have risen by about 10% and the market's valuation has increased by about 15%. So we started the 2024 with the S&P trading at about 19 times forward earnings, and currently the market's trading at about 22 times earnings, or 15% higher. The drivers of that valuation increase has been a combination of a couple of things. So first, it's increased confidence in the sustainability of the economic expansion, given the stronger growth delivered this year in the context of higher interest rates. Right now, we're tracking towards a soft landing or a no landing, and that is certainly contrary to the expectation over the past 12 to 24 months, when there were, you know, certainly heightened risks of a hard landing. I would say second, valuation has been supported by the start of the Fed's easing cycle. And then last but not least, we've seen a meaningful boost to market valuations from, you know, what is called the Magnificent Seven, or the mega cap tech stocks, many of which are benefiting from advances in artificial intelligence, particularly the AI enablers who are building out the infrastructure to enable AI models and applications.
So, Jeremy, as you pointed out, equities have performed very well, not only this year, but the last couple of years. As we look ahead, do you believe there's more room to grow for equities?
That's right. The S&P is up over 50% since the end of 2022. But do keep in mind that, you know, 2022 was a lousy year with the inflation spiking and the S&P 500 index falling 18% for the year and 25% peak to trough within 2022. And so much of the gains over the last 2 years outside of the AI benefits were catalyzed by the fact that the economy didn't roll over, despite the fact that we saw 500 basis points of interest rate hikes from the Fed from early 22 to the middle of 2023. You know, looking ahead, you know, my expectation is that we're going to continue to see, you know, the market make new highs over the course of 2025. You know, our base case scenario is that the economy cools a little bit next year, but continues to expand. So somewhere between a soft landing and no landing, we should see lower inflation, which allows the Fed to cut interest rates by another 75 basis points to 100 basis points next year. You know, and the combination of improving manufacturing activity, a resilient consumer, and continued robust spending on AI infrastructure can drive another 10% rise in S&P 500 earnings. And with the market, as I mentioned, trading at 22 times, I doubt that we'll see, you know, much more multiple expansion, but I think it's reasonable to have baseline expectations that the index can rise in line with that 10% rise in corporate earnings. That's exactly in line with the CIO equity strategist David Lefkowitz's expectations of the S&P 500 ending next year at 6,600. But clearly, there are risks to that baseline view, and I know we're going to dig into a few of them in this conversation, Dom, but I'd recommend that investors remain focused on the generally healthy core equity fundamentals, resilient economic growth, continuation of advancing corporate profits, fading inflationary pressures, and, you know, a Fed that is likely to be able to continue to reduce interest rates back down to somewhere between 3% and 4%.
Thank you. So another topic that's top of investors' mind, especially now that the election is behind us, is Donald Trump is likely to focus on his agenda. And we believe he'll be focused on his four key agenda items, which are immigration, tariffs, deregulation, and lower taxes. How do you think these priorities could impact the equity markets in 2025?
A great question. Right. Admittedly, there are unusually wide error bands around some of our forecasts for growth, given the potential policy impacts of those four agenda items. But I would say that despite the lack of clarity on the prioritization, the sequencing, and the magnitude of each of those areas, I think it's helpful to break it down into two buckets. You know, from a markets perspective, there's the good Trump bucket, which would focus on growth-enhancing initiatives, which are lower taxes, and implementing deregulation across multiple sectors with a more significant impact on the financial services and the energy sector. Then there's the bad Trump bucket, which would include implementing broad-based and significant increases in tariff rates and meaningful declines in net immigration, both of which would lower GDP growth and spark inflationary concerns. Maybe adding some details to the positive impact, you know, Team Trump would likely, you know, focus early in his administration or second term on an extension of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, extending personal income taxes, which is set to expire at the end of 2025. And there will also be a strong push to lower the corporate tax rate from its current level of 21% to as low as 15%. And we're also likely to see deregulation efforts occur more quickly, which during Trump's first term as president led to a strong initial boost in small business optimism. On the other end of the spectrum, we'll just have to wait and see what level of tariffs are actually implemented. During Trump's first term, he sequenced tax cuts first and then raised tariffs, particularly on China, later in his presidency. And the markets responded positively, particularly, you know, in 2017. And I would say it's a potential good sign that he nominated, you know, Scott Bessent as Treasury Secretary, who generally supports global trade and sees the benefit or utility of tariffs more from the perspective of using them as a negotiating tool to even the playing field with other countries rather than the end goal in and of themselves. And I would also add that most of Trump's policies, you know, from a broad, you know, 30,000 foot view, should only amplify on the recent economic and market trend of what I'll call U.S. exceptionalism, where the U.S. delivering stronger growth than the rest of the world. So if we see lower taxes and regulations in the U.S., even if we do see higher tariffs, those higher tariffs would likely pose a greater risk to growth for non-U.S. economies vis-a-vis the U.S.
So earlier you touched a bit on CIO's positive view on equities for 2025. And one of the themes highlighted in the Global Wealth Management's Year Ahead piece is the AI opportunity. What are your thoughts on the theme, and how do you believe investors should capitalize on this opportunity?
Yeah, it does appear that we're still in the early days of the AI revolution. You know, so far we've seen capital expenditures by the, you know, big four cloud service providers and social media platform companies rise from $148 billion last year to an estimated $222 billion in 2024, or a 50% growth. And the CIO team estimates that figure to rise to close to $270 billion next year. Now, these mega cap companies are largely spending on the infrastructure that enables AI, such as the GPUs or semiconductor chips that help train large language models, memory chips, networking capabilities, and building out data centers. The next stage of the AI value chain is enhancing the intelligence layer, or the large language models, to include text, images, and videos that are robust, intuitive, and reliable. So going forward, you know, we're going to see increased use of that application layer in AI by both businesses and consumers via, you know, various terminology, whether it's called copilots, agents, or other tools that'll help businesses and consumers improve productivity and access to information. There's already, you know, some concrete examples of large companies implementing AI. You've probably already experienced AI in action if you've ever seen personalized content previews and recommendations on Netflix. But expanded use cases more recently have been some of those big mega cap tech companies actually using AI internally to increase their own productivity. So for example, Alphabet noted in their last earnings call that 25% of its code is now being written by AI. And many other companies such as Best Buy and Etsy are using AI-powered virtual assistants or other tools to optimize their customer service. So I think we'll continue to see AI be a powerful theme in the equity markets over the next few years, and investors should have exposure to stocks that are supporting both the enabling layer as well as that application and intelligence layer as companies increasingly utilize AI and produce not just applications, but other tools to help boost their own internal productivity.
So with the expectation that the Fed will continue to cut interest rates in the new year, the Global Wealth Management team has highlighted that equity income strategies could help investors sustain portfolio income. What are your thoughts on the Fed, and how do you view income-generating strategies, Jeremy?
As I mentioned, the Fed's already cut rates by 75 bips this year, and over the next year or so, in our base case, where inflation continues to decelerate towards or reaches the Fed's 2% target, I would expect to see another 75 to 100 basis points of cuts to bring the funds rate between 3 and 4% by the end of next year. In such an environment, CDs and other short-term bank savings rates will fall. And as that relates to the stock market, for one, lower rates should help some of the end markets where growth has been held back due to high financing costs. So, some cyclical areas within the industrial sector, like capital goods manufacturers or transports and the railroads, typically benefit when lower rates spark increased manufacturing and goods production. I'd also highlight housing. We should see a bit of an unlock if we see lower rates from the Fed lead to lower mortgage rates and increased home equity loan financing for home improvement projects. And if I think about just more broadly at a stock market level, lower rates tend to boost the appeal of dividend paying stocks, since it makes the dividend yield on stocks incrementally more attractive relative to the declining yield on cash or cash proxies. So dividend growth stocks to me look particularly appealing in the current environment, since their dividend yield will look increasingly attractive versus cash, and their dividend provides, that is growing over time, provides that growing income stream, which can protect investors against inflation as that, increased dividends improve and increase consumers' income and purchasing power.
So I'm going to switch gears here for a minute. The next question is, what keeps you up at night? And I know you're a father to four girls, so maybe that's a broader question, but more related to the equity markets.
Yeah, I would say not only am I a father of four girls, I'm a father of four teenage girls. And so examining my Ring doorbell video late night is one of the things that gives me significant anxiety. But as it relates to markets, I would highlight three risks that could, you know, derail the generally attractive backdrop for stocks that I've outlined here today. One is tariffs, and we talked a little bit about tariffs, but should Trump actually put forth his campaign threat of a 60% tariff on all Chinese goods and a 10 to 20% tariff on all imports, it would reduce global growth significantly. And so keep in mind, 43% of U.S. goods that are imported, or U.S. imports, come from Mexico, Canada, and China. And those are the countries he's targeting. So if we do see, you know, the threats of the level of the tariffs consistent with the campaign promises and not used as a tool to level the playing field, then we would expect to see, you know, market volatility for sure, and lower aggregate domestic growth and global growth more broadly. I would say the second area that keeps me up at night is inflation, right? Inflation trends have been coming down, but if we do see pro-growth policies and pro-inflationary policies delivered by the Trump administration, there is some potential to see a bit of a reacceleration, particularly if we see, you know, net immigration start to slow, and that could potentially slow the supply of labor. Then there's potential for inflation, you know, particularly wage inflation, to start to rise again, and making, you know, could delay the expected Fed rate cuts that the market and I am expecting. And then lastly, you know, we talked about AI, and while I'm generally bullish on the outlook for AI, we do need to recognize that expectations are high for a lot of mega cap technology stocks that are viewed as AI beneficiaries. So any stumbles in use cases or concerns about the return on investment, or, you know, concerns on what is being referred to recently as scaling laws, or the ability of large language models to improve as computing power increases, you know, any, you know, setbacks in those areas could drive, you know, market corrections, given the very high concentration by market cap of the Magnificent Seven and the S&P 500.
So staying on that topic, one of the questions I hear most often from clients is how do they should position themselves going into 2025, considering that the market dominance has been really driven by a handful of mega cap names, in particular around AI. Do you expect this trend to continue, or do you anticipate a bit more broadening of the markets in 2025?
So I expect that we will see a broadening out of market returns in 2025, but not necessarily because AI falters, but more due to the fact that the earnings outlook for what I'll call the S&P 493, the non-Magnificent Seven companies, should see a meaningful pickup going forward in earnings and narrow the earnings gap between the haves and the have-nots in the market. So we're recommending that investors really balance their positioning with exposure to secular growth opportunities in areas such as AI, electrification, and power and resources needed to fuel the AI boom, combined with high-quality, value-oriented cyclical stocks that can benefit from a normalization of interest rates and rebounding profitability in some of those areas that have seen earnings depressed because of high interest rates or a weak global industrial economy. And so outside of AI, this would include industries tied to housing and home improvement, some capital goods manufacturers and transports within industrials. And I would say even within tech, you look at analog semiconductors as a segment that should benefit from an earnings rebound. I'd also include financials, you know, in that mix, where a resilient economy and less onerous regulation should be good for net interest margins, loan growth, overall credit quality, and for the prospects of increased capital market activity.
Thank you again for your insights. I want to wish everyone a joyous holiday season.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.